Good morning, University of Manitoba campus, and welcome to UMFM's information and entertainment program, Your Campus Today. For Friday, January 18th, I'm going to be your host, David Devane. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11:30 a.m., we bring you all the U of M news that's fit for your ears, plus keep you in the loop on just a few of the great events going on here at the U of M campus that you need to know about. On today's show, students voice their frustration toward UMSU's lobbying efforts. A U of M science student receives a prestigious designation, and this year's Distinguished Alumni Award winners are announced. All this and more coming up next right here on Your Campus Today. At the first board meeting since lobbying for students in Ottawa in early December, UMSU President Jacob Sanderson gave a presentation explaining the priorities of the trip, some of which left some at the meeting feeling frustrated and disappointed. Jacob Sanderson, along with UMSU VP External Owen Black and Governance Research Advisor Kyle Hebert, spent December 3rd to 6th lobbying members of Parliament with the undergraduates of Canadian Research Intensive Universities, or UCRU, on several priorities, including increasing support to Indigenous students, expanding Canadian undergraduate student research awards, and eliminating the tuition tax credit. UCRU is a collective of research universities that advocates for students from 8 student unions across Canada. The UMSU executives in attendance advocated in support of ending the federal tuition tax credit, estimated at $1.5 billion by UCRU, and instead recommended the Canadian government reallocate the funds to the Canada Student Grant Program. At the meeting, Jacob Sanderson called this maybe our most notable ask and said the goal is to provide financial relief to low-income students. The issue with the tuition tax credit is that a lot of people don't know about it, and so a lot of them end up not being claimed, or sometimes they're claimed by a parent or guardian, or funds are not claimed until a long time after graduation, he said. The most consistent users of the tuition tax credit are generally those in high-income brackets, and a lot of the time those in lower-income brackets don't have that income that's taxable, so they can't really take advantage of the tax credit. Or a lot of the time, people that have lower income are people that don't have accountants. They don't have access to the information that people need to take advantage of the tax credit system. The Canada Student Grant Program provides non-repayable funding to both full and part-time students with assessed financial needs. So that money can be used up front by students rather than being used later in the form of a tax credit, Jacob Sanderson said. Mohamed Soucy, the Muslim Student Association external executive who is in attendance at a student-at-large at the board meeting, said that as a student who relies on the tax credit, he is concerned about students which were not properly consulted by UMSU on what it lobbied for in Ottawa. I highly doubt any of the student body at large has any idea that UCRU even exists, or that we're even a part of it, he said. I don't even think that any of them knew that Jacob actually went to Ontario and actually lobbied. I don't think that anyone is actually up to date on anything on the actions of our own elected officials, other than the student board of directors, which for me is absolutely insane. Sanderson pushed back at the meeting, saying it was the responsibility of the UMSU board as elected leaders to make these decisions. I don't think it's ever bad to go to the students, but I also think that our board is our highest governing body, and I trust everyone here to be able to bring forward the concerns of the students, he said. Mature Students Representative Charlene McCoy, who said she was speaking as both a student and a parent who's putting children through university, and had some concerns with the impact of reallocating tuition, the tax credit funds, also raised concerns, calling the effect of eliminating the credit on families actually very damaging. I'm curious if you thought the impact that removing the tax credit would have for families, she said. The magic number to get a grant isn't as high as you would think. In Canada, the family annual income cutoff for full-time students with dependents, a dependent qualifying as a person 12 years of age or under, or 12 years of age or older with a permanent disability. To be eligible for a student grant is $114,017 for a family of four. Jacob Sanderson said that while the executive was sympathetic to the issue, UMSU and UCRU's concerns are that all the funds available through the credit program are not being used. He said the grant program would benefit students in the lowest quintile of household income. I guess my response to that would be, yeah, the eligibility cutoff isn't an absurdly high household income, but there are a lot of students also that have household income significantly before that number too, and those students often are seeing almost no benefit, he said. UCRU recommends the Canadian government implement these changes because tax credits are no longer an effective tool to financially support low-income students. According to the list of UCRU briefs, providing grants upfront will reduce the sticker cost of education, thus lowering debt levels and better utilize the government's current allocation of funding, while adding no additional expense to the federal budget. Soucy said he believed the idea would harm students in the long run. I did get a bit ticked off emotionally that Jacob would say that it was for affordable education, he said. That is the opposite of affordable education, in my view. To take away money from someone and tell them this is for affordable education does not sit well with me at all. The final issue of 2018 of the Proceedings of Manitoba's Undergraduate Science and Engineering Research, or PMUSER journal, has been released, and U of M student Michelle Wuzinski has received the year's Best Paper Award for her research on distinguishing subspecies of a pathogenic bacteria. Wuzinski, a fourth-year microbiology honor student, won for her paper titled Developing a Genotypic Scheme for Myobacterium Abscessus Complex Using Whole Genome Sequencing Data. The paper looks to support current methods of analyzing the data from all of bacteria's DNA, whole genomes, to distinguish between different strains and subspecies. So basically, a way that they use to type bacteria, it's called multi-locus sequence typing, she said. So they take a few genes, and then every time there's like one base pair mutation of that gene, a new allele is created. And then they're typed based on different combinations of alleles that they have. PMUSER is a peer-reviewed undergraduate journal which covers, according to its website, a wide range of scientific disciples. While the journal was founded at the U of M, it accepts any research work done in Manitoba by undergraduate students. Wuzinski, who received a $250 prize sponsored by the Faculty of Science, said she was not expecting to win the award. "I found out through email, and I was actually quite surprised," she said. "I was told that I was on the short list for the award, but I had no idea how many submissions there were and what my chances were, and I was about to write a final exam when I found out, and it was a wonderful surprise. The winnings are probably going toward my tuition next year." While Wuzinski said she is not sure where she will pursue her education after finishing her final year at the U of M, she wants to continue in the field of microbiology. "I want to go into medical microbiology because I've always been very passionate about diseases and their effects on humans." Following border regulations put into practice December 31st, nearly all international students coming to study in Canada will be required to submit biometric information. Biometrics are a method of measuring a person's physical features. Since July 31st, 2018, all applicants from Europe, the Middle East, and Africa have been required to provide biometrics. These requirements expanded to applicants from Asia, Asia Pacific, and the Americas December 31st. Canada will require anyone applying for a visitor visa, refugee or asylum status, a work or study permit, or permanent residence from these areas to provide a photo and fingerprints. However, students enrolled in university applying to renew or extend their student permit from inside Canada are not currently required to submit biometrics. A statement from the university's online communications arm, UM Today, warns that this may change, and if so, some applicants may have to leave Canada, submit the biometrics needed to return to study in Canada. In an official statement, Minister of Immigration, Refugees and Citizenship, Ahmed Hussein, said Canada requiring biometrics makes sense on so many levels. "It strengthens the integrity of our immigration system while helping protect the safety and security of Canadians," he explained. "Currently, over 70 countries require biometric information for entry." Esther Wu, a U of M international student studying business at the International College of Manitoba in that program, said the new biometrics requirement is not particularly surprising to her. "It's nothing special for me," she said. "I'm just providing my fingerprints." The fingerprint process will become a central part of the application process. Digital fingerprints will be sent to the RCMP, where the information will be stored in an Immigration, Refugees, and Citizenship Canada database, where they will be encrypted and securely stored. RCMP officials will check the fingerprints alongside criminal, refugee claimant, deportee, and temporary resident application records. Should there be no issue with the information, the application process will be complete. If concerning information is found, a central assessment unit from the IRCC will analyze the case, and the migration officer involved in the case will make a final decision on the application. Major airports will verify fingerprints at primary inspection kiosks. There are some exemptions to the biometrics rule, namely, U.S. nationals applying for a work or study permit will not need to provide them. Waqar Ahmed, a U of M international student, finds this exemption concerning. "I feel that it is part of safety protocol, so it's safer for the country to use biometrics to identify different people," he said. "But I feel like just because you're from a well-developed country like the U.S., I think they should just check everyone, instead of just assuming that people from developing and underdeveloped countries will be more dangerous to Canada." Ahmed added that despite these concerns, he still supports the introduction of more countries to Canada's biometric regulations, but increasing it to include more countries, I'm fine with that, because it's safer for Canada. For the past 60 years, the University of Manitoba's Distinguished Alumni Awards have honored trailblazers, innovators, and visionaries, graduates whose outstanding accomplishments have inspired people close to home and around the world. This year's recipients have made an impact in the fields of finance, social advocacy, community leadership, and university education. Lifetime Achievement, Dr. Hirsch Sheffrin. Dr. Hirsch Sheffrin has built his career on behavioral finance, the understanding that people can be unpredictable, rash, and foolish, and these human conditions can and have had disastrous consequences for financial markets. Over the past four decades, Dr. Sheffrin has been a pioneer in this area with research into self-control issues, ethics, and risk management, and succeeds where many scholars do not, effortlessly translating this complex data into practical advice for academics, professionals, and the public. Dr. Sheffrin is also a regular contributor to Forbes, The New York Times, and The Wall Street Journal. For professional achievement, there's Marcia Nozick. When Marcia Nozick, BA 75, MCP 88, graduated with her master's in city planning, she could have picked a number of ways to make a name for herself, such as designing a new suburban development or transportation corridor. Instead, she chose to revitalize Canada's poorest neighborhood, Vancouver's downtown east side. In 2001, she founded Embers, an innovative temporary labor company, and has since helped thousands of people facing work barriers attain full-time employment and reintegrate into society. Today, Embers is a multi-million dollar social enterprise, and Nozick is a nationally renowned community champion. Service to the University of Manitoba, Rommel Dulla. Even during his days as a student at the U of M, Rommel Dulla was a passionate supporter of this alma mater. He founded the University One Student Council, led a campaign for an award for student leadership, and was a champion of many important causes at the U of M. But the involvement and dedication of this two-time alumnus didn't stop there. He was elected by alumni to serve on the University of Manitoba Board of Governors. He served for 9 years, where his advocacy at the U of M in the community, on campus, and in the eyes of the government, contributed greatly to the betterment of the university. For community service, there's Gemma Dallaioin. Since immigrating to Winnipeg more than 40 years ago, Gemma Dallaioin has made community service her mission in life. As a founding member of the three-time president of the Manitoba Association of Filipino Teachers, Incorporated, or MAFTI, she played an instrumental part in the preservation, promotion, and sharing of Filipino cultural heritage through a variety of programs and student scholarships. She also spent decades as a teacher and vice principal whose guidance has helped shape students into future community leaders. Outstanding young alumni, Lindy Norris. Lindy Norris wears many hats. Tireless volunteer, community leader, and business professional. At the young age of 27, Lindy founded Athena Leadership, a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing leadership development, mentorship, and networking to women professionals in Manitoba. To help young women secure adequate financial support, Athena established the Leader of Tomorrow Scholarship Fund that is awarded annually to young Manitoba women who are standout community leaders, exhibiting Athena's values of empowerment, integrity, and philanthropy. Join us May 8th, 2019 at the Celebration of Excellence, where we'll honor our five 2019 Distinguished Alumni Award recipients. You can purchase tickets here or over the phone by calling Alumni Relations at 204-474-9946, toll-free in Canada at 1-800-668-4908. We're going to be taking a quick break right here, but don't touch that dial. We'll be right back with more of Your Campus Today.
Attention brothers, sisters, and gender resistors. It's the dawning of the Age of Aquarius. Slump Factory is returning for their fourth event at Club 200 on February 3rd with It's My Party, an Aquarian birthday bash. Come down to 190 Gary Street to catch some stunning drag performances, support young performers making their debut, and maybe win a raffle prize. Doors are at 8, show at 9, and cover is only $5. Birthday presents are highly encouraged, so RSVP and we'll see you at Club 200 on February 3rd.
The Black Hole Theatre's second main stage production of Peer Gynt opens on the 23rd of January at the John J. Conklin Theatre at the Teche Arts Complex. The play, written by Henrik Ibsen, is a classic, and the title character is one of the most beloved comic heroes in the world theatrical repertoire. The play itself, one of the most beloved comedies. We follow Peer's adventures and sexual escapades as he journeys across two continents trying to find himself. The world Ibsen creates in this play is a fantastic and surreal one, peopled by trolls, invisible monsters, nymphomaniac cowgirls, mysterious apparitions, and the devil himself. This production is the university's contribution to the RMTC's Master Playwright Festival this year. The production also includes live performance of new music commissioned for this production from Quinn Joseph, the U of M student who composed the music for the Black Hole's production of Murat Zod last season. The performance will take place from the 23rd of January to the 2nd of February. Tickets can be purchased in advance or at the doors. For reservations, performance times, and group rates, please call 204-474-6880.
A motion brought forward by the UMSU Board of Governors in December by its LGBTQ asterisk community representative to change the title of the position to the Gender, Sexual, and Relationship Diversities Rep was tabled indefinitely Thursday. The motion sought to change the name after concerns arose that the original acronym was not inclusive enough, and adding additional letters to it would be cumbersome. LGBTQ asterisk rep Yoon B. Kang first brought the name change idea to the attention of the Rainbow Pride Mosaic in October. However, critics argued the wider LGBTQ asterisk community on campus was not made appropriately aware of this motion, putting to a petition circulated concerning the change as an example. When the proposal was presented to UMSU's governance committee, the petition had received only 15 signatures from, according to Kang, mostly RPM regulars. Kang said at Thursday's board meeting that upon further reflection, she believed the possible change required more input from the LGBTQ asterisk community at large on campus. Moving on this motion under present circumstances, I believe would be irresponsible on my part, she said. Kang said last week that while the idea to change the title came from the desire to represent and include more of these marginalized groups, she had been having second thoughts about the motion. She said at the time that the original idea to change the name didn't get any engagement from RPM. RPM was approached several times before Thursday's board meeting, both through email and in person, but deferred comment to Kang. Kang said Monday that she heard from representatives of several other LGBTQ asterisk groups on campus regarding the proposal and realized bringing the motion to the UMSU Board of Directors so quickly was a mistake. I realized that no, I hadn't done my job as the LGBTQ asterisk rep, she said. My actions had been very insular, just limited to within the RPM community. But I am the UMSU representative, not the RPM representative. So I should be representing the views of all LGBTQ asterisk students on campus. And I realized I just hadn't reached that standard yet. Kang said she plans to approach other LGBTQ asterisk reps on both the U of M campuses to inform them of her decision to table the motion and discuss the motion's origins. She said she also plans to hold a table in UMSU University Center over the last week of January and the first week of February to make aware to the wider community about this whole change, as well as maybe try to collect more signatures. So I would have two position papers, one in support and one against the title change. And of course, I'm going to ask people to self-identify as part of the LGBTQ asterisk community or not. She also stressed that pulling the motion back does not mean she has given up on the possible name change. I just think that I didn't go about it properly, and I want to fix that. Lauren Taraschuk's personal mantra may be get a little bit better every day, but as the old sports maxim goes, you can't teach size. Currently listed at 6 foot, the Winnipeg-born netminder stands well above the average for both men and women in the general Canadian population. Furthermore, she, quite literally, stands head and shoulders above every other netminder in Canada West. This height and the advantages that come along with it goes a long way toward explaining how she has quickly become one of the nation's top goaltenders. Taraschuk won a national championship as a rookie and had a conference best 0.71 goals against average and second best 0.961 save percentage. However, her height also provides plenty of issues that teams like the University of Alberta Pandas, currently occupying first place in Canada West, are ready to exploit. When facing down a shot, a major detriment of success on the part of the goaltender is covering as much of the net as possible. The less open space you give the shooter, the lower the chance they have of putting the puck in that area. Of course, there are shooters out there who can pick those corners and gaps, but in women's hockey, Taraschuk is in a class of her own. When most female netminders drop low to the butterfly, or even drop into their ready stance, the area over their shoulders is exposed. Along with this is a lack of width in the torso, necessitating greater arm movement to cover shots going laterally. Taraschuk, on the other hand, covers between 5 to 7 inches more vertical space, still touching the crossbar when she's down low. This imposing figure covers more net and requires more skilled shooters to get the puck behind her. The obvious solution to this is cross-crease and cross-ice passes, forcing Taraschuk to move laterally and expose more net. However, again, her height compensates. Not only does she already cover more space than the average women's hockey goaltender, a lot of her height comes from her legs. Taraschuk is able to move laterally much quicker than other goalies, owning primarily to her strides, being longer, toss in a good glove hand and blocker, and she is nigh unbeatable. While Taraschuk's height may be a boon in some respects, as can be seen with tall male goaltenders such as Ben Bishop and Connor Hellebuyck, there are literal cracks to be exploited. The length of one's limbs does not necessarily translate to the width of said limbs. While Taraschuk can extend her limbs out to make saves, this extension does not help shots going below her arms and pads. More effort than average is needed by larger goaltenders to move their limbs vertically and stop pucks. This was on full display for Taraschuk against the University of Alberta on January the 4th. Down 2-0, Autumn McDougall picked up a headman pass and went in on a partial break. She snapped a shot, sneaking it just below Taraschuk's left knee to make it 3-0 Alberta. In that moment, Taraschuk's height hurt her. With a much longer leg, more time and energy were needed to close that angle and drop the ice. More energy needed to move a larger object. Large goaltenders have more trouble with lower saves because they need to move more physical mass to cover those areas. This same principle exists with all left-catching goaltenders facing left-handed shooters, and the same for those on the right. A shot low blocker is hard to stop because the blocker itself is so heavy. However, for Taraschuk and other tall netminders, the problem is exacerbated by the overall increase in area under the arms. The solution to this comes down to her team's defense. If they can force shots from further out, this will give Taraschuk more time to see and react, saving her the hundredth of a second needed to get in the way. Taraschuk has seen a statistical decline this season, which you could argue is due to a Bison squad missing key veterans from last season. Further, with another year in the league, teams can plan to face her more effectively. That being said, with a 1.5 goals against average and a 9.38 save percentage so far in the 2018-19 season, Taraschuk is looking far from solved by her opponents. Winning submissions and all Manitoba entries to the 2018 Prairie Design Awards are now exhibited in the Faculty of Architecture until February the 6th, 2019. Over 30 projects are on display, including 24 from Manitoba, of which 4 are award winners. Come explore the work of Faculty Architecture alumni, celebrate regional design excellence, and be inspired. Every 2 years, the Alberta Association of Architects, the Saskatchewan Association of Architects, and the Manitoba Association of Architects celebrate those setting new standards of creativity in the skill of architecture, interior design, and landscape architecture. This tri-provincial collaboration has been recognizing design excellence in the prairies since its inauguration in the year 2000. In 2018, awards of excellence and awards of merit were given in the categories of recent work, interior design, landscape architecture, and small projects. The 2018 awards reception was held at the Fairmont Banff Springs Hotel on May 11, 2018, in conjunction with the Alberta Association of Architects 2018 Banff Session Conference. Learn more about the Prairie Design Award winners by clicking here, www.prairiedesignawards.com/2018/2018.html. The exhibition runs through February 6, 2019, in the J.A. Russell Building Foyer and Center Space. The Rady Faculty of Health Sciences College of Rehabilitation Sciences will hold its annual open house on January the 20th from 1 to 3 p.m. at the Brody Center, 727 McDermott Avenue, Bannatyne Campus, University of Manitoba. The open house is targeted to students interested in pursuing master's degrees in occupational therapy and physical therapy or Bachelor of Respiratory Therapy. These programs prepare future healthcare professionals for rewarding careers in a variety of settings in health, social services, labor, and education. Students and faculty from all three programs will be on site to answer questions as well as lead tours and share information. This open house gives potential students a chance to learn about exciting options in physical, occupational, and respiratory therapy careers, says Dr. Reg Urbanowski, Dean, College of Rehabilitation Sciences. Having a chance to talk to current students and faculty will give them an opportunity to explore avenues they perhaps hadn't considered before. The nation's fourth-ranked Bison women's hockey team returns to home ice this weekend to face off against the Regina Cougars. Puck drop on Friday is at 7 p.m., January 18th, and 4 p.m. on Saturday, January 19th. Both games will be played in the Wayne Fleming Arena. Friday night at the Wayne Fleming Arena is alumni night, and fans will be treated to prizes, giveaways, and the best in Canada West women's hockey. All U of M alumni are invited to attend with a special ticket price of $5, while fans 17 and under are free. It's a great way to reconnect with the student experience while supporting current student athletes. Be there Friday night, as it's guaranteed to be an evening packed with fun for all on and off the ice. Bison men's and women's basketball teams will be matching up against the Trinity Western Spartans in a two-night matchup at the Investors Group Athletic Center. Tip-off on Friday will be at 6 p.m. and 8 p.m., and on Saturday at 5 p.m. and 7 p.m., with the women taking the court first on both nights. Regular admission is $10 at the gate. UM students and fans 17 and under get in for free. The Bison track and field team will also be in action in the James Daly Fieldhouse for the Athletics Manitoba Open. The team is heating things up as they prepare to host the 2018 U Sports National Championships March 7 and 9th. More details will be released soon. For the full schedule information and more Bison news, visit gobisons.ca. Thanks for listening, everybody. And we're going to be closing out today's show and the week with a track from another one of the many great participants in this year's Big Fun Festival. This is Vancouver's Woolworm and their song Sun Rock. Have a great weekend, everybody. Stay warm, and I'll be back Monday morning with more U of M news to keep you in the loop. As always, I've been me, you've been you. My name is David Tufain, and this has been Your Campus Today. Your Campus Today is a collaborative production between UM Today, the Manitoban, the Department of Student Life, and this station, UMFM 101.5. Thanks for listening, folks. If you have a story you'd like us to feature or want to send in feedback, please email us at campustoday@umfm.com.